Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today, we're going to switch up a little bit on our every Wednesday topic and discuss something serious. We're going to discuss today, we're going to be talking about the issues of harshest of sentencing, community issues. We're going to be talking about criminal justice in the U.S. and how long overdue it is for the reform. So our guest today, Stacey Woods, will be talking about her fiancé, Patrick, who has been incarcerated for 30-something years, received two and a half life sentences, and I'm going to let her talk more about it. So, Stacey, are you on with us?
Good morning. Thank you very much for coming on board today.
Well, thank you for coming on, Stacey, because your issue is not isolated. We have these problems in the U.S. I was also receiving a call about a half an hour ago from a woman from New York whose son is in Indiana prison, and she called to state that her son called her to tell her another prisoner has committed suicide, hanging himself. We need to look at these sentences that are being issued by the courts in this day and age. Every state operates differently, but the problems are still the same, leaving these prisoners with no hope whatsoever, and many of them reverting to suicide. Many of them have given up hope. Many of them are serving their sentences and are being punished beyond punishment. So we're going to have on with us today Stacey, and she's going to talk more about her loved one's issue, which is also very, very unrealistic and very, very much in need of reform. So, Stacey, please introduce yourself and let us know what's going on with your loved one.
Hi, I'm Stacey. I run a Facebook page called Florida Free Pat. And the reason I named it that was because we need Florida to free Patrick Peterson, my loved one. At 19, he was sentenced for two life sentences plus 50 years for rioting and aggravated battery of Leo. He will be 50 years old. He's been down a total of 34 years. He's in the Florida Department of Corrections, and the state of Florida is pretty much horrible when it comes to laws that are on the books. Giving life sentences. In the state of Florida, there is no life with parole. There's no parole system in place in the state of Florida. None. Like, if you get sentenced 70 years, you're going to serve 85% of your time, and you're going to die behind bars at the Florida Department of Corrections. Florida has more life sentences in 30 states combined. Yes, I said 30. There is no hope behind those bars. None. The legislation in the state of Florida refuses to act. Florida has the third largest penal system in the country, and the legislation refuses to act. But yet we have an overpopulated Florida Department of Corrections, a lack of guards. They don't want to stay. You know, they come in and they see the horrible conditions there is, and they just leave. So they cannot keep anything. So most of the guys stay under lockdown, sometimes 23 hours a day. It's horrible, and there, you know, when you have no hope, there's really nowhere else to go from there. And none of these guys that walk in like Patsy, that with life sentences, they have no hope. And this country is supposed to be the land of the free, but yet we are the most incarcerated nation in the world. in the world.
Exactly. You know, Marion Jacobs, as you know, comes on usually on Wednesdays. She wasn't able to make it today. But that's one of the things she talks about is the comparison between the prisons in the U.S. compared to others. Franz Kurzer's, I always say, too, from Germany. But what you're talking about, Stacey, is very important. And one of the reasons we have the radio show is to encourage all of you in the audience and those who listen beyond this, those who even listen after the show, to encourage you to have that passion or some compassion for these incarcerated individuals that do not need to be sentenced to life and life without parole. We have serial killers and terrorists behind those prison walls who are serving life and life without parole. However, those that Stacey is talking about and others that do not deserve life sentences are being inflicted with the same exact sentencing. How do you expect them to try to do right, to do better, if there's no incentive to do better? There's no hope. And this is why I'm thankful that Stacey is bringing these issues out, because it's very imperative that we start looking at these things. And again, as I say, we have to consider the victims, but we also have to look at these victims behind these prison walls. So, Stacey, continue, please.
When I hear, you know, people say, oh, they did the crime so they can do the time. You know, I agree if they break the crime or break a law or, you know, but people are redeemable.
Exactly.
They're not irredeemable. God doesn't give up on us. God does not state that we are unredeemable. So who are we as a people, and who is a judge as a person, a human being? How are they able to look down at somebody and just say you're unredeemable, life without parole, and clink that gavel? I think it's utterly ridiculous. If you lock them up and treat them like animals, don't you expect them to act that way?
But
if you lock them up and rehabilitate, let them, you know, come back out into society and give back to society. But now it's the Department of Corrections. I know in Florida, the Department of Corrections, they just continue on with the punishment. They don't give them anything for them to act any better or to do any better. You know, Pat's been down for going on 34 years. And for what? Like, okay, so he was a 19-year-old hothead, and he, you know, was involved in a riot. Oh, okay, I get that. That's bad in itself. But they used Patrick, and they used a lot of other people by their harsh sentences, by trying to make a statement. What statement are they trying to make other than, in the United States of America, we lock away our people so our government can make money off of them? Because that's what's happening. Mass incarceration is unsustainable. It is not sustainable at all. The older people get, the likelier they are to grow out of crime.
And that's the truth. It's in statistics. People have often said that. They grow out of crime. Now, they're looking at these youth today, and they're coming up with all these lenient sentences for these people that are committing crimes today. And those who have committed crimes at the same age or years and years ago, it was nothing like it is today. And these people, our government, needs to stop focusing on those that went in when they were under a certain age, and they need to start releasing them and giving these others that are committing crimes now some consequences, but not saying that they're not going to punish them, and, you know, giving them life sentences or high sentencing, because it's no longer considered necessary. Well, if it's no longer considered necessary, then start looking at these people that have been in prison, as you say, with Patrick and so many others, for 25, 30, 40, 50 years. They need to start looking at these people who have served their time and are no more a risk to society.
Exactly. You know, there are so many, and I know in Florida for a fact, that are serving life sentences basically for just plain robbery. And Florida has the three strikes you're out law out in California, but Florida made it two strikes you're out. If you were in any trouble when you were a juvenile and you get in trouble again as an adult, anything 18 and over, they honest to goodness will give you life. They give life sentences in the state of Florida probably like you give candy out in Halloween. If you go to court, if you go to trial, which is every American's right to go to trial, then and they find you guilty, they give you life. They don't even give you, you know, what an actual sentence should be. Florida they make more money on the Department of Corrections than they do in tourism.
I wanted to ask you real quick, Stacey, are you familiar with Society First?
Yes.
Okay.
We are.
I was going to say, because they have been also talking about the inhumane and harsh, really, in Florida. I know it's happening all over the country, but Florida seems to be right now one of the main topics is with Society First.
Yes, ma'am, it is. And I will honestly tell you, I talk to inmates in Florida every day. And some of the stories that you hear it's mind-boggling. It's so sad and it's so wrong. And the court systems in the state of Florida they're horrible. They're horrible. They have some of the worst crimes, laws on the books. And a lot of these laws date back to slavery. And anyone can sit here and say, you bring up slavery, that's this, that, or the other. You're so wrong. That's been over with. No, it has not. And all this is this mass incarceration that our government started stating that this is to crack down on crime. Crime is not going anywhere. If you have a country that is seriously acting, I mean, we don't ever, we talk about, take away the guns for what? Maybe a week or two after a mass shooting? But then we never take away these guns. Why is there automatic rifles on the streets in America? Why? I grew up growing up in the country. My dad had shotguns and rifles because he hunted and fished and everything. But he did, and he was a Marine, and he didn't have no automatic, rifle out here like you should have in war.
I want to say real quick, I have three brothers in the Marines, by the way, congratulations. But I want to say one thing, and you just said it. These people come out of the military, and most of them, none of them, well, now we see where the enemies are in this country. They're encouraging guns. But none of these people, when they came out of the military, had assault weapons. None of them. And now we have even some of the military men out there that are doing so much wrong. And you mentioned earlier about these crimes and these things that these people are doing. We have a government that when it happens to their own, that's when they promote leniency.
Yeah.
leniency. And this happens all the time. As soon as, look what marijuana became legal, but yet there's still people serving time in prison. Why did marijuana become legal? First of all, we have a lot of young legislative members today. Secondly, we have a lot of older ones who have children, who have sons in their adolescent years. So where does all of a sudden now some of these things are becoming more lenient and acceptable? Why? Because of our government and because of people in leadership or influential who are able to start making these changes because it's happening to them. We had a governor a while back in Massachusetts whose daughter was, and I have nothing against GLBTs because I have many friends that are, but I will say because his daughter was, all of a sudden they started allowing marriages and all these things. But these are the things that happen. Marijuana gets accepted. A lot of people in politics now that are either young or have loved ones are doing it. So when it fits their opportunities, when it fits their situation, then all of a sudden you see changes. But the thing is you won't see it happening in the prison because they always seem to get away with it. We have a governor in this state whose son, they have to land the plane because the son, it was sexual assault or attempted. And so they have to land the plane. Okay, the state police took him away, but that was the end of it. Many people in Massachusetts were furious because they said, why are some people penalized while others who have relatives or friends or it's who you know can get away with it?
Exactly. And that's exactly the point. The point of it is just like Pat, his basic, back in the early 90s, there were a lot of rioting going on in the prisons in the state of Florida. And he was used as an example, literally set as an example. And I have talked to legislatures all about Pat's crime. Pat holds the largest sentence in the state of Florida history. In the prison history of the whole state of Florida and the chain gang. And he literally holds the longest record of the sentence because why? It was politically motivating back in the 90s. And they didn't want to have any more rioting in the state of Florida. They literally used him as an example of what would happen if you did this. They walked the Florida Department of Corrections down the day that Pat got sentenced, and they made them watch him get sentenced.
I agree with you real quickly. I agree with you back in the 90s because my loved one, it was also political because everyone, including the DA himself, the prosecutor himself, got promoted. One got promoted to Congress, and the other one got a police officer, and got promoted to a private detective. Well, he didn't get promoted. He was able to get, but these are the things that have happened. Promotion. Yeah. The 90s were the worst for getting a political gain out of sentencing prisoners
exactly.
to life or long sentences like that.
I just find it horrible that, you know, they've sat here and they choose to constantly pick and choose who and what they do. Look, people want to say it all the time. Oh, you know, there's so much. They don't racially profile. Do your homework is what I tell them. Do your homework because if you've really done your homework, then you would really realize that, you know, our country is based on money. If it's all about money, it is all about money. And that's truly the honest thing. They make money off these prisoners. Prisons are high money makers. You got to, and not just on the, just not making money off the prisoners, but off their families as well. You have phone calls, commissary, and they may be ward to the state, but you're still having to send them money. You still have to make sure that you're taking care of them while they're on the inside. But you can't even claim them on your taxes. I think it all needs to be relooked at and readjusted, you know, totally
of course.
Done different. Yes. And it's sad because they're, you know, they're locking these young kids up. And just like Pat, they've locked him up. He has no, you know, family. He'll never have any children. And that's just not right. That's not, you know, parole should be brought back in this country. It should be, these mandatory minimums all need to be taken off the table. And these life sentences, no one should serve life sentence in anything except for a humongous, heinous crime. We don't even kill terrorists, okay? Unless they're in other countries. Look at all the ones still in Guantanamo Bay. Are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
We're America. We should be doing better. We should be doing better for all of our citizens. We should. And I think what's fair for one person should be fair for all the people, no matter what race, no matter anything, across the board. We need to take all the power away from these prosecutors who make all the decisions on how long they want you to serve. And it should be put back in judges' hands again.
Exactly.
It's unreal, and it's unreal, and it really saddens me that, you know, there's people like Pat that are just dwindling away. I mean, if you met Pat now and Pat when he was 19, you'd be like, wow, are you really that same person? You know, they grow out of crime. They grow up and they mature. And they should be given that second chance once they prove that they're no longer doing wrong. You know, Pat wants to come home and do a ministry and go out here and talk to these kids in the street and tell them, look, what you're doing is going to lead you down the same path that led me.
Exactly. And a lot of these older incarcerated people who have been in for years are wanting to do the same thing. They want to try to help these young people in the communities to not do the same thing, not make the same mistake they made. And that's where they need to be released so that they can have that opportunity. We have a caller, 323. You want to state your name, please?
Yeah, hi, Leona. This is Joe. How you doing?
Hi, Joe. We have Stacey Woods on with us. She's talking about her loved one. Her fiancé has been serving. He's been in now, what is it, 34 years, Stacey?
Yes.
And he's been in for 34 years, and she's talking about that. And I want your thoughts, too, on the harsh sentencing in this country.
Well, maybe some other time. The reason why I came in here was because I missed you a couple of weeks, and I had told you about what was called the Hope Collection.
Yes.
And they have a talk, on Blog Talk Radio. I was there about a week or so ago, and I told her about your show, and I was talking about how you're trying to find relief for the incarcerated and how you're trying to help people who get out of prison. So when I was talking to them and I asked them if they had any resources about that, they said they were just beginning at that time. Somebody, I think, probably knew, was going to specialize in helping people who get out of prison to make sure that they stay out of prison, to give them resources for food, housing, maybe even some mentorship. So I said, okay, that's good. So I wanted to let you know, it's called the hopecollection.org, and you can go there, and I don't know if that particular function is there, it's easier to find, but if you go there, you can contact them and find out exactly what they have in alignment with your particular mission as well. And like
and
I said, they have a show on Blog Talk Radio.
What is it? Hopecollections.org?
Hopecollection.org, yeah.
Okay. Now, do they have anything?
At the same time.
Do they have anything for prisoners who have been given a harsh sentencing, or are these for the just those that are soon to be released?
I don't know. I only talk to them about recidivism and prisoners who were being released, because that was the last topic that you had that I was on your show about. So I thought I'd relate that to them. So
okay.
Anything else that they have, you can find out.
Hope Collections. Okay, I just went on. I'm trying to...
I don't think it's Collections. I think it's Hope Collection. One word.
Okay.
And you know, there should be more recidivism centers out here. I totally agree. That's one thing that me and Pat really want to work on, is doing a big recidivism center in Florida. You know, people say, oh, why you don't come and help us here, Ms. Stacy, or, you know, come and go here. Well, here's the deal. You can go wherever you want to go, but shouldn't you always take the head off the biggest monster first? And one thing I always tell them is the legislatures, they don't want to hear how they can take away people in the facility. They want money. It's all about a money game. And it's sad that our government is making money off of the backs of our citizens.
Exactly. Yeah, Hope Collection is on. I see it on the internet now. Okay, so, you know, as you were mentioning, the money part is the reason for the mass incarcerations. We are very much aware of that. And with what Joe just mentioned about the resource with this Hope Collection, you know, that's what they need to focus on, is getting more resources out there, letting these prisoners transition into these programs, instead of releasing them from the prisons, instead of just keeping them. What taxpayers don't realize, and this is sad, taxpayers do not realize that their monies are going into such foolishness. Their monies are going into a penal system that's doing absolutely nothing but getting more and more money. Now they get it from the taxpayers, they're getting it from the family members, they're getting it from the prisoners themselves that, you know, that are able to get money through their jobs or whatever. They're getting money all around. And this is why the prison system is building more prisons. This is why the union is so powerful, because of people in society that just don't give a if you don't mind my language. And that's sad. That's sad because the audience, I hope you're listening. I'll tell you, people have to realize, too, when we talk about these issues in this country, whether it be state by state, whether it be national, we have to realize everybody in each state has relatives and friends in other states. And so all we need to do is get our relatives and our friends and our fellow advocates and us in anyone in government that's willing to do it, is to get it out there, get the word out there, and let's start doing things on a national level to resolve these issues on a statewide level.
Exactly.
Get these programs, like Joe was talking about, get these programs going, get more of them going, and start releasing these people to these programs.
Exactly. You know, a lot of people just sit here and say, oh, you know, you just want all these criminals running around free. No, wait a minute. That's not even right. You know, once a person, I mean, how about we just be fair for a change and give fair sentences, not none that are going to have them sitting and rotten in a, you know, a 6x9. You know, down in Florida, there is no air conditioning in any of their prisons, hardly any of them, except the newer ones that have been built. These men sit there all day long in 115 degree heat with the index in these places, and that is just inhumane. It's inhumane.
It is.
These still are humans. And you know, one of my favorite quotes is by Nelson Mandela. And he said, you can tell a lot by a country by the way they treat their lowest citizens, the ones in prison. That really does not say a lot about America. And I'm sorry, you can sit here and say, oh, well, you know, we're cutting down crime. No, you're really not. You know, people need to educate themselves on why there is such a mass incarceration in this country, why there are these bills that are on, you know, the table laying there, and just literally, you know, where we can just, you know, just do wrong by our own people. Like, these are our own fellow citizens, and this is sad.
It is. But, you know, this goes to show you too, if you notice, just Stacey, when they have these movies on, everybody jumps to want to go see these violent movies. Now, what's the purpose of it? If they're so upset with these people that are in prison, why are they watching all these violent movies and crying for these people to be incarcerated? And where are these movies coming from? These movie producers are getting their ideas from those who have actually gone to prison, from those who have actually committed crimes. So we live in it's almost like the people go both ways. They want the violence, but yet they want the harshest sentencing for those who have committed violence. And they don't realize, that's why a lot of suicides, a lot of these people that have committed crimes are remorseful, even though the media has no knowledge of what remorse is all about. People hold things in, and that's why we have mass incarceration as well, because a lot of people that are incarcerated were victims themselves before becoming incarcerated. They were victims as adolescents. They were victims as children, and these people couldn't cope anymore, so they reached out. Unfortunately, some of them reach out to the wrong people, to other people like themselves, and that's how crime starts. Or sometimes they're resilient with everything that's happened to them until they can't be resilient anymore and they snap. People don't realize that these people behind those prison walls were not born bad. And whatever the crime that they've committed, we have to be sympathetic and try to find out why they did it, try to help them. And again, life without parole is bad enough. But when we have a government, a court, judges who think 2.5 life sentences makes any sense, that shows that judge also needs to be in some kind of therapy, because no one lives to be 2.5 years, 2.5 life sentences. No one. We're lucky if we live to be 100.
And like I stated, the state of Florida, they will do double jeopardy on you left and right, left and right. I mean, they have all these, like I stated, all these crazy laws. Well, then they'll enhance them even worse, and then that's when they call you a habitual criminal. I've got people that call me on a daily basis, the first time they've ever been in trouble, and they got a life sentence. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? I mean, I know people that, you know, I've had people that call me, and some of their stories are horrible. And just because, and I will say one of them, you know, he was being sexually molested for years and years and years by his dad's ex-girlfriend, and he couldn't take it no more, and he snapped, you know, and it doesn't matter if whatever, what he, you know, he still feels remorse for what he's done. But should he spend the rest of his life in prison? No, because he was a victim also.
Exactly.
I mean, and that's what these people do not understand. Maybe instead of sending them to prison for the rest of their life, how about we send them to places that can help them, you know, like help them overcome this pain that was done to them, or the harm that was done to them. You know, they send alcoholics and drug addicts to prison. Why? Because they have a health, that is a disease. They should be sending them to rehab. and monitoring them through rehab, not to prison for life sentences. Because you can still get drugs in prison just like you did.
Exactly.
And, you know, earlier we was talking about the military. I cannot tell you how many times I get a phone call. Matter of fact, I got one yesterday, and he was a captain in the Army, in the Air Force. He had already did 3 tours in Afghanistan and Kuwait and Iraq, and his wife was having an affair, and he snapped, and that's what happened. And they gave him 40 to life.
Jeez.
Never in trouble. Served our country honorably. And I said, thank you, sir, for your service when I was getting ready to hang up. And he told me it was my honor to serve this country. Honor to serve this country, a country that has no problems putting our military away for life. And there are many of these men in the Florida Department of Corrections. Florida, the state of Florida, needs to wake up. We, the people in the state of Florida, are starting to demand this more and more. Come stand with us, is what I tell anybody. Come stand with us. Help us fight these unrighteous life sentences, because life should not mean death in the state of Florida. It should not mean anywhere across our country. It should not. I have a guy that calls me every week, and he said, Miss Stacy, I'd go fight over here in Ukraine if that would get me out of prison. I don't mind putting my life on the whole online.
I've heard that from other prisoners too, that they will go and fight for the U.S. and these countries, you know, if they were willing to release them.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, you know, that's the harsh reality of it. You know, I literally said here, there, you know, I have literally spoke to several people that are highly connected with highly big names and profiles in this country. And, you know, 2 of this highly profiled person's family is doing life in the state of Florida Prison Department of Corrections.
Mm-hmm.
2. So my thing of it is, We need voices, media voices that are going to hear our voices. Call me, 813-370-2647. Call me and help us bring some of these lifers home. Lifers that have been in prison for 40, 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
And I have nowhere to go.
Some of them elderly, some of them very sick. You know, hold on a sec. We have another caller, 347? 347?
Yes. Sister Leona, this is Sister Rakiba Fatima Basia.
Okay, Rakiba is the one that... is the woman that called me earlier to tell me about the suicide in the prison in Indiana.
Yes.
You wanna mention briefly about that, Rakiba?
Yeah, my son just called me and informed me that someone in the hole took their life by suicide once again, Indiana. All these prisons are bad, but the fact is that there's a constant. He's in a facility, wrongfully convicted, just as myself prior, for a crime that never happened. And he had informed me that not only this happening, but the fact that they're quarantined, how mentally debilitating it is, because They had three individuals inside his immediate dorm who were infected with COVID, one being his bunkie.
Oh.
Fortunately, that he did not contract it like he was exposed to the Legionnaires, which is also taking place in there and throughout many of these state prisons and outside of the country as well.
Yes.
Because of the negative, you know, it's a form of attempted murder. That I put it in those terms.
You mentioned he was in solitary confinement. Real quickly, I want to just touch base on that too. Solitary confinement is a major issue in this country as well. They keep these people in solitary confinement. They keep them on restricted housing unit to break them.
Yes.
And this needs to be addressed because as Stacey was saying, this country is. The inhumanity, we look at these human rights organizations all over the world, and then we look at what's happening in our own country, in our own prisons, and they put them in solitary confinement. A lot of them are in solitary confinement for doing absolutely nothing. This is because they have no control over anything that's happening in their lives behind those walls. This has to stop. Really, and I'll tell you another thing. I mentioned also with the evaluations that they do, most cases, they evaluate these people as being antisocial. These prisoners are not antisocial. These overseers are antisocial with prisoners because if other countries can treat their prisoners like human beings, then we should be able to see that happening in our own prison system, but it doesn't. It does not happen.
Exactly, and this is what we were discussing the other day, yesterday, and prior, okay, how there have always been punitive measures. You know, it's harsh enough when someone is wrongfully incarcerated for a crime they did not commit. That's punitive within itself when you get framed in some of the most heinous crimes because I've experienced it, and I'm still trying to get my name cleared. But this is part of what happens when you are an activist. On the other part, you know, it extends down to your family. We have family members that fought for this solid country, my son's father included, who was a Marine veteran in the Vietnam War area. You fight for the so-called freedoms that everybody calls themselves and enjoying. But we have to look at the reality that slavery has never, ever left America. You understand what I'm saying? Since 1619.
And I'm going to touch on that. You know, if people say that slavery has ended, go read your Constitution. The 13th Amendment will tell you exactly why we have a mass incarcerated problem at this time.
Yes.
No person shall serve in bondage except for and unless than serving time for a crime. Serving time for a crime. Go look at it. That's what is going on. And you know, that's exactly what we're stating down here in Florida. You'd be amazed. They put Pat, not only did he get sentenced to life plus 50 years, okay, but when he went back, when he was taken back, they housed him on death row, one, and two, they put him in solitary confinement or controlled management for 7 years.
It sounds to me as though the ones that have the most hate in them are the ones that are sentencing these individuals. But they have to have such hatred in them to do something like that. And look at what the people of members of society are looking at are these individuals getting sentenced. They're looking at their families, but they're not looking at the hatred, the extreme hatred that those who are sentencing must have for somebody they don't even know, someone that they don't know the circumstance. All they know is what went on in court. There's a lot of things that go on in court that are not true. I can tell you for a fact, there's a lot of times the witnesses or the victims themselves, or they're not the victims but the family members of a victim, they will lie in court. And people, they don't look at that.
Do that because of the fact that they're threatened by the police or the prosecutors or anything.
Yes.
Oh, well then let me tell you, you're looking at this crime too. You can go away for life. Come on. This is ridiculous. Yes. And they say that we are a civil country. Americans stick their nose in everyone else's business. Stick your nose in your own business, I say. Let's check some of this that's going on in this country. You know, God gave us voices for a reason.
Yes.
And he intends us to use it for good out in this world. You know, Martin Luther King said it. If when is the right time to do the right thing? It's right now.
Exactly.
It is right now, people. There are entirely too many people doing too much time in this country. And until we start standing up for our own again, you know, and not stop, you know, not 2 weeks after, you know, a certain thing happened, go back to our business, you know, go back and not hear of it again. No.
And Stacey, I want to say something too. And because, as I mentioned before, I also have multi in my family. But you sound like, and we have a lot of, this is why we can't talk about all these racist people, because we have a lot of whites in our society today who have seen the injustices and have been standing up for those who are being treated
I'm
so
I'm sorry, I have to come off for a minute.
And I will say, Stacey, your loved one has to be a person of color?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
And I'm white.
And that's what I was just going to say. And this is why when we talk about the Caucasian race and their racism, we have to also remember that throughout the 1600s that you were talking about, throughout the years, there have been a lot of whites who have seen such injustice, have overcome whatever talks that they've heard about it, have interracially married or interracially dated or whatever. And like I say, I'm a prime example of it because there's multiculturals. And what happens is it's those out there are putting out these harsh sentences. And not only to the people of color, but mainly to the people of color. But they're putting out their racism out there to give them the harshest sentence, which shows that the hatred is still there. It still exists. Because
it's extremely thick. We have never taught anyone in this country why it is. Look over in South Africa. They still live in peace. They're living in peace for years now. Since Nelson Mandela came out, and they made it a unilateral country. What is people not understand? Look, I'm one of those that was raised in a family that, I mean, oh, they would flow the N-word left and right. I wouldn't have, you know, it was nothing. But I will honestly tell you, when I met and married my husband, my dad was totally against it. Totally against it. And I told him, I'm like, look, you raised me to love everyone. I don't just see, you know, I look what's inside a person.
You broke the cycle. And I want to say, my mother was Lebanese. Unfortunately, and she was from Worcester. She was from Worcester, Massachusetts, the Abrahams. And my mother became an outcast after she had my older brother and I. She became an outcast, so she moved out of Worcester and she moved to Cape Cod, where she met my adoptive father. But I will say, when we are taught to love everyone, and then we have family members who discourage or hate because their daughter or son or whoever it is interracially gets involved, then they're not doing the right thing. They're not teaching love. They're teaching hate. Because I don't care if it's a black, red, brown, beige, or whatever. If you teach your kids to love, it doesn't matter what the pigmentation is, what color they are. My mother ended up leaving Worcester, and she ended up moving to Cape Cod. And she was very sad, and throughout the years, I could see it in her face. It hurt her very much. But she did the right thing because she wasn't racist, and she taught us all love. She taught us how to treat other people. And that's the way, it seems like that's the way that you are going as well. And I admire you for that.
I raised my, you know, I got twin totally African-American stepsons. And then I have a son and a daughter. Now, you can put all four of them in a room, and they all look the same because they all look like their dad. But not only that, my children, I raised them to love their brothers as much as their brothers love them. And it does not matter. I tell everyone, any person, you bleed the same as I bleed whenever you cut yourself. And I'm not here to say, oh, you know, do this, do that. I'm telling people, you know what? How about we just give people the benefit of the doubt again in this country? How about we just stop looking at other people's differences and start accepting them, start learning about them? Open your mind. Open your mindset. You know, that's what a lot of people don't understand. But hatred comes from fear.
I agree to a point. I agree, but fear is not 100% either. I think it's just a matter of these people being born into hatred and racism because of their ancestors teaching them and teaching their parents, and it just is a cycle. You broke the cycle. Apparently, you broke a cycle, but not everyone does.
Not everyone does. And you know what? It's sad because, you know, I will honestly tell you that being a mother of biracial children, especially in America nowadays, and it's sad. You know, people say, oh, you don't have to teach your children anything about race. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You know, I want my children to know all of their ancestry, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because not to be funny, it's not, and they don't see the realness of all of it and all the trailblazers that they have had in front of them. You know, there's so many people out here that don't realize, you know, they'll go watch a movie and it'll be inspired by true events. But they walk away and they're still blindsided. That's crazy to me.
You know what a lot of people forget, and yes, your husband or fiance, Patrick, it tells right there. It's an Irish name. So what people don't realize is that a lot of the people that they hate of color in this world, in this country, they're people that were, their ancestors have either Scottish or Irish or something in them because of slavery time. But there were also mistresses of slave owners. I'm sure that slave owners fell in love with. But the problem is a lot of these people that are hated so much had that Irish in them, or they had that Scottish in them, or for whatever reason. And the white man forgets it's their ancestors that impregnated these women who had children who had some of the same race in them. So they're hating their own race, although it's a mixture now.
Exactly. And that's
one of them.
They're blind,
yeah.
They don't see.
Mike Scott, I don't mean to interject, but since you brought that subject up and I'm back, this is Sister Bakiva Fatima Basia. My grandmother's father is Irish, Sicilian, and Castellano mixed. And my great-grandmother, her mother is African-American with Blackfoot and Cherokee Indian. So we have a mixture of cracker blood, Native American, and Spanish blood in our family. And the fact still remains is that, like you said, they impregnate, especially the firemen from slavery that's been extended into us. They hate us, but they don't have no problem schooling our men, schooling our women. You understand what I'm saying? now trying to be part of. I'm not, maybe some of them are sincere in their repentance or trying to make up what their ancestors do. But like I said, my recent experience with somebody who I entrusted, and I asked this young white girl, you know, who was supposed to stay on for the ride, you know, are you going to stay on for the length of this ride with my son's wrongful conviction with me? Because it's enough that I'm dealing with my own that I have put on the side to try to help get him out. And she, oh, no, no, yes, I'm going to be here, I'm going to be here. Then the bitch turns around and tells me, oh, well, I don't have the capacity to deal with this anymore. But I asked you that almost a year ago.
Hi,
I said it was something that she said. So this is why I'm apprehensive, even though regardless, they don't care if you got white blood and you like them. You understand? They are devils. Not all of them, but majority of them are devils. And you see it through the white supremacy that's being executed upon our people and even some of their own who don't accept how they treat people.
You know, it's a hatred that I think is taught. It's so much easier to like people and love people than it is to hate people. You spend so much negative energy and time with the hatred of people. And, you know, it's sad that this country is even like that. And, you know, I will tell anyone, what's even more sad is just the fact that it's gone on for so long. It's so long. I mean, isn't it time that we as a country come together for the good of things? You know, how are we supposed to fight together for something if we're so far apart on everything else? You know, we elect all these people and, oh, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. But they never do anything they promise they're going to do. So,
of course.
So, like I tell people, I don't need to know that candidate. Because no matter what, when they get in there, they're still going to do what? Nothing. So
exactly.
What is the difference? Why do
exactly.
I got to sit here and, you know, for my loved one with my big mouth, okay? That I promise you will get done.
Yes.
The rest in the way they do people out here is just sad. It is so sad. And I feel, you know, heartbroken that there's so many men and women in these prisons that have nobody or lose everyone when they go to prison because of the stigma that prison has attached to it. And that is so wrong.
Well, you have to also, too, we have to also educate people. You know, I'm part of, you know, Justice for the Wrongfully Incarcerated has been struggling to get established for years. You know, Sister Salam, mother of Yusuf Salam from the Exonerated Five, that's who I had to accept a call when I was on with y'all earlier. And we've had some setbacks even with politicians who now, you know, I've heard was being investigated, but now is actually investigated, that don't have to be in the situation that they're in. They have stalled. They have had laws that we've been trying to get enacted, especially from people not only wrongly incarcerated, but individuals that when you come home, like I've been home 11 and a half years, I'm still struggling to get myself established, you know, successfully reacclimate, which is almost impossible because there's no laws etched in stone. We have every candidate, and I just said this yesterday, and Sister Leona could co-sign it, yesterday, that we have to look at the people that we put in office. These individuals, like I go to their office and I let them have it. I said, listen, you practically bang down my door and everybody else's off the hinges trying to get voted in and being elected, and you, because you feign concern about the concerns of the community. But I had no issues in regards to so-called criminal justice reform, a word I don't like even using, you know, that the fact is that nobody touches basis on that until they're directly impacted by what people like myself and others will go through.
That's
what
we're talking about. That's what we were talking about before you came on, too. But what I was going to say real quickly
is right, because right now we're really focusing on, you know, I know that you're going through an awful lot because of what happened to you, and also another person who has been trying to come on the show to tell his story because he was wrongfully convicted out of Texas. But what I was going to say is right now is that we really need to look at what's happening behind those prison walls. And when we were talking about the hatred of the white man, I wanted to say one thing real quickly. And you know something, I'm close to the speaker, so I know I'm coming on loud, so I need to back away. But one of the things that we have to realize are these people that have this hatred in them. If they now were to do a genogram, they probably will find out somewhere in their history that there was black blood. And this is what a lot of them don't realize. A lot of them, because they look white, because they haven't. I watched Phil Donahue one time on television years ago. He had on these two sisters who were black, but they looked completely white. And he had an all-black audience. And what happened is the audience was really going after them, you know, well, you might say you're black, but you're probably married to white husbands. And they weren't. They were married to black men because they were black, but they looked like they were totally white. And they said they went back, their parents went all the way back in their genes trying to find someone in their genes who was white. So we have these people with such hatred on them, and now with all these genograms, there's all these ways that they can find out if they have any color in them by taking these genograms. But there was a young man one time, and I believe it was in Massachusetts, I'm not sure. He was a white supremacist, went to a Jewish cemetery and destroyed the cemetery, the cemetery plots. And it turned out that he was a white supremacist, but it turned out that he was black, had black in him, and was so ashamed of his own race because this is what people in society make them feel as though they should be, which is totally crazy. And getting back to the prisons with these harsh sentences, as Stacy mentioned, this is unrealistic. It's unrealistic, it's inhumane, and this is why we have mass incarceration. And I'm going to say not just with the blacks, the browns, the red, and the beige. Whites are starting to feel the same pressure, starting to feel the same ignorance of our government, the same harsh sentencing.
But this call is from a correction facility and is subject to monitoring and recording. Thank you for using Global Telling.
Any questions, please ask Pat.
The system, Pat. We have somebody calling in?
Yes, it's from the
Stacy. Pat is on the line.
Okay, have him come on. We'd love to hear from him.
Patrick?
Yeah.
Please, Patrick.
You're on a talk show host.
Greetings, Patrick.
How you doing?
Good. We want to thank you for... We're glad you're able to come on. Stacy's been talking about your situation, and we've been talking about the harsh sentences that are occurring in this country, inhumane sentencing. So I'm glad you came on. Can you talk a little bit about your feelings? I mean, two and a half life sentences is totally ridiculous. Can you speak more on that?
I was involved in an incident when I was 19, and
I wanted to say real quickly, that's one of the things that are being worked on in this country is to, and they raised the limit, it's now 21 in some states, to the age of responsibility, but there's a lot of work being done on these issues of being sentenced to prison for life without, and all these other sentences. For people that have committed offenses under the age of now 21. But can you talk a little bit about, because I'll tell you, we all have a loved one inside serving a life or life without, or even in your case, these unrealistic sentences of 2.5 life. This goes to show you the competency of our government when they think that 2.5 life sentences is appropriate for anybody. But we wouldn't need more from you.
Yes, I was as you say, I was sentenced to 2 life sentences, 50 years. Non-habitualized. So that's basically, in Florida, that's basically a natural life sentence. And I've been incarcerated now 32 years. And as you said, when I was young, I was doing some crazy stuff when I was young. But as I matured, like you said, the age of maturity at 21, I agree with that, because as I did mature, as I got into my late 20s and my 30s, my whole mentality did change. And now I've been DR-free for almost 20 years now, with no write-ups or anything. My whole mentality is different than what it was at that time. So to give a person that type of time is, to me, absolutely ridiculous, unnecessary, because if I didn't have that type of time and I had a chance to go home 15, 20 years ago, I'd be a whole different person than I was at that time, and I'd probably be a positive to society right now.
And I was telling Stacy there's a lot of prisoners who went in when they were under the age of 25 who had no idea, because they were young and many of them foolish. And a lot of prisoners, I always say, were victims before becoming offenders. A lot of you I know went through some serious changes at the ages that you were. And the harsh sentencing of life with, like I say, 2.5 life sentences is really unrealistic, and it needs to change. We have been interviewing people from other countries, from the Netherlands, from Germany, and even Norway is a role model for all prisoners. But we've been interviewing people from other countries who have stated the maximum that they have is 25 years for any crime, and that they treat the prisoners as human beings. In this country, they treat them by numbers. So these are kind of issues that I wanted to kind of talk about as well.
Yeah, I received 2 life sentences for two aggravated batteries on officers with my hands, no weapon. I received that. There's no murder involved, anything like that. So I received that for crimes that in other states and probably other countries that would be probably punished with 10 or 15 years. And I got they were making a political example out of me at the time, because at the time when I did catch this sentence, they had a lot of riots going on in prison. And the Compass, a prison, officer's magazine, they had an article in there about how they were making an example out of me. And they had certain institutions to sit down for that day of my sentencing, sit down and watch me be sentenced. So they wanted to make an example out of me and my cousin, Rico Wise. They wanted to make an example out of us, and that's what they did. They tried to curb the riots that were going on at that time.
Stacey had mentioned the same thing. I want you to know his little cousin's in prison for the same thing. Only when the juvenile law, 18 and under, could go back and get their life sentences off of them. Rico went back, got his life sentences off of them, but they still sentenced him to 80 years. So I mean, he'll be 98 before he could leave prison.
But as you mentioned, Stacey, it's a racial thing in this country, and this is where we need to continue to work on these things, because we have, as you mentioned too, a government. We have legislative members that know this is wrong. They could be doing something about it. They're not doing enough. We have a few that are working on criminal justice reform, that are trying to do away with life and life without parole sentencing. But unfortunately, we have politicians that are doing just the opposite, and that's what the problem is.
And that's why I said, with us in Florida, we are fighting these life sentences. And like I said, if you want to stand with us, come stand with us. We need media attention down there, and we need...
Stacey, please give your contact information as to anyone that wants to help in any way at all. How can they reach you? Where can they go? You know, we're encouraging you, the audience, to please participate. Please do something, because This has got to stop in this country. So please give them any information that might
okay, I will.
Be. Please do.
You can contact me at Florida Free Pat, FloridaFreePat at gmail.com. I'm also on Facebook under Florida, and then Free Pat is all one word, FreePat. Or you can always call or text me. My number is 813-370-2647. We need media attention in Florida. Florida must take down these life sentences. These are men that deserve to come home and women that deserve to come home because they have changed. They have grown out of crime. They have become a completely different person. And in Florida, there are no second chances. None. That's
why. Not for a life sentence. Once you sentence to life in Florida, that's what it is. You sentence to die. Yeah. And I
in
I know I should have been punished for what I did, but I don't think I deserve from the age of 19 to be in here for the rest of my entire life for battered on law enforcement officers.
Especially
with
no.
Those carry 5-year sentences in the state of Florida. A lot aggravated battery on the Lido.
Aggravated battery has to carry 15 years at the maximum. And
most get 5.
Most people get 3 to 5 years. I would say 2 life sentences in 15 years. And like I said, I done made a change in my life, and I'm studying right now in seminary to be a minister. That's what my life goal is right now, to reach society again and become a minister and practice my ministry out there in the free world. But right now, I don't have that chance until this is caught and we overcome these type of sentences. And there's other examples like me in here, or many other examples like me in here.
Many. I mean, I have kids call me every day, Miss Stacy. If I would have known, if I only would have listened to my mom, if I only would have done this, or I only would have done that. And you know, and I tell them if it was, you know, something you could change, you would have. But I would tell all of them, you made a mistake, but you're not a mistake. And until we as a country start putting that back into people, you got to, what you put out in this world is what you get back. And if you're not putting out something good, then don't be upset when no good comes back to you. A grown-up man, and he deserves to live outside of those walls a grown man in his own home.
You know something? My son, who's wrongfully incarcerated now, and this sounds like almost not exactly the same, but similar. In the state of Georgia, you know, because when I was wrongfully incarcerated for these 27 years, my children were taken out of the state of New York to Georgia. And my son and a 17-year-old son, as he grew, because he's very tall for his age, from 14, him and a 17-year-old at the time, were picked up in a lineup, not because they did the armed robbery on public transportation, but because they fit a description. My son went to trial. He was arrested at the age of 15, placed in with grown people twice his age. I had to get on the phone and make some calls and write letters for him to be removed from there. At 17, he was tried for the crime and wrongfully convicted and sentenced to 20 years in prison. So he literally grew up in prison. You know, he didn't make rational calls. You know, psychologically, they have proven that when any crime, whether innocent or guilty or a victim of circumstance, is committed by a young person, their mind is not, their brain is not as mature enough as somebody much older.
Yeah.
And the problem is,
that's what they're working on, as they say, in this country today, is the age responsibility. But what I was going to say real quickly, because Patrick only has a certain amount of time, I want to hear more from him about the situation. And we have another 15, 16 minutes. So, Patrick, please proceed with what you were saying.
Yes, I was just basically saying, you know, I'm studying to be a minister. I've changed over the years. I grew up, as she was saying, I grew up in a hard environment, and I did some crazy things out there in society. And I was on some wrong thinking, some real wrong thinking. And my early record, if you see my early record compared to my record later in life, you'll see the change. And this is something that I consciously tried to change. It's that I naturally changed to who I am now. It's an age thing. It's a maturity thing. The thing that I look at now, at the way I see life now, is totally different than what I did when I was a teenager. I look back on some of those things, and it disturbs me and it baffles me that I even did some of those things at that time.
And you know, I speak often about prisoners being victims before becoming offenders. And you mentioned that, you know, that you did grow up in some hard times. So what was it like when you first went to prison? I mean, it must have been so devastating. At first, it's a shock. So people are not affected at first. When they actually go in, what was it like knowing that you just got a sentence at 16 or 17 or 18 or 19, two and a half life sentences? That must have been so devastating.
Yeah, well, to tell you, I came to prison when I was 17, with 17 years.
Hey.
While I was in prison, I got involved in a riot in prison. And I was 19. That's when I got the life sentence. But once I got the life sentence, as you say, that's very true. You do feel like a victim, like I've been wronged, and you have a very angry and aggressive attitude at this time. It's like, okay, they want to put me in here for life, now I'm going to give them something to give me to justify me being in here for life. At that time, when you're young and you do feel victimized, I gave up on the world.
You were just a child. This is so frustrating. You were just a child. People in society don't have a clue what it's like. It's like a child being sentenced to two and a half life sentences for a mistake.
Yeah.
Real quickly, too, I talk a lot about these riots and these things that happen in the prisons. A lot of people don't realize a lot of times these riots, there was a riot in Massachusetts back in January of 2020. And the people that started the riot was shipped out of the prison to other prisons because three guards, I believe it was, got hurt. But what it turned out to be, were these guards, one of these guards were giving these prisoners on the block a very, very difficult time. So these prisoners asked if that guard could be transferred out of their block. And they were told to deal with it the best way they could because that guard was going nowhere. Sometimes these things that happen within the prisons are provoked by the penal system, prison officials or the COs. People don't understand. Sometimes things happen. Also, when you went in, Patrick, I'm sure you were challenged by other prisoners because this is another thing prisoners have to go through. They have to go through the challenge of being able to defend themselves because they're going to be tried by other incarcerated individuals. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And situations like that do occur. That's every day. That's an everyday occurrence that you are tried, attacked by other prisoners. That's every day. Every single day in prison, you go through that every single day. Even here, I'm in an incentivized compound now, and we still have small issues. Not very many issues, but we do still have them same issues here, even at an incentivized compound. But in the more high security compounds, that's every single day you're gonna have those issues. And like I said, the incident I was involved in, it involved officers jumping on inmates at the time. Officers brutalizing, I'm talking about brutally brutalizing inmates at the time. That would set that riot off. So, but you do have incidents, well, same what you just said, the same exact thing. Well, officers, when I was young, that's how they told us to handle up. You got to complain against this inmate. Don't come to us. Don't be a wuss or whatever. You just go and handle that. Y'all in prison. Go handle that. Do what you got to do. We'll come in there and clean it up. That's what they used to tell us at that time when I came to prison. And basically, they still do the same thing.
These are the issues in Florida. The Florida Department of Corrections is full of nothing but a bunch of, I mean, just hateful guards. Seriously, there's so many red good old boys in that system. It's just unreal.
It's majority of them is, but you got some good officers. You got some good officers that try to help you and try to lead you in the right direction and get some of us in programs, and they do mentor us and some of them. But the majority of the officers, you're right, Stacey, the majority of them are very angry and vindictive, and they feel like they got to stress the punishment on us for society. I don't know where this comes from.
I talk about that all the time. When you mention good guards, and somebody one time, there was a guard that went on Facebook and responded to the anger and frustration of people that were talking about SEALs. And the guard said that he was one of the good ones. He wasn't like that. And they said as long as he was not exposing his corrupt peers, he was part of the problem. And that's the way we look at things. There's a lot of good guards. There's a lot of good CEOs. There's some good prison officials. But the majority of them need to be exposed. And I talk about Donald J. Vodica was a 14-year-old veteran correctional officer at one of the biggest prisons in California. He was on the show. He talked about the injustices in the prison. He exposed his peers. He wrote a book about it because he exposed him for the abuses, the substances, everything that was going on. Not only him, but Michael Johnson he was a lieutenant with the Department of Corrections in Montana. He and his partner, they came out. They exposed the Department of Corrections. We need more guards and we need more prison officials to start exposing. And we now get called.
And stop taking things away. You know, state of Florida Department of Corrections now are wanting to take away all physical visitation. They want to take visitation away because they say that's where all the contraband of drugs and phones are all coming in.
Please, as I say all the time, go on the internet and type in drugs being smuggled in by guards. You find it all over the internet. Drugs being smuggled in by guards.
That was exposed. That was exposed during COVID when they had us on lockdown. We couldn't get a visit, and drugs were still massively coming into the prison. It couldn't come in, but only one way in.
That's
and
that right.
From the outside, from
and it's a known fact. Look, these men are all men and women are all away from their family, their children, all their loved ones. Visitations matter. The physical touchness of having. Pat, explain what visitation does for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it gives us peace. It helped me calm. It helped calm me. It gives us hope. And once I met my fiance, my future wife Stacy, it changed me. It really changed me to be able to go out to visitation and be with her every weekend when she was here in Florida. But that's what visitation do. And if I didn't have it, I could tell you this here. When I first came to prison and I did start talk to my mother and my family again, because I had shut myself off from society once I had that life sentence. I was going all the way out. But once I did get that contact with my mother and my family again and my baby sister, who grew up and became a lawyer just to fight for me. But once I did get that contact, if that was taken from me, once I got that bond back, that love back, it felt, if that would have been taken from me at that time when I was younger, and I was, what I was going through, I would have lost it. I would have totally lost it.
Well, we were talking about that earlier. We only have about 5 minutes, but Bakiba was on the phone with us, and she was talking about her son called her from Indiana prison to tell her that one of the prisoners committed suicide. I'm going to say when my son first went in, the same thing, getting away without parole sentencing, it's a devastating thing, and the first thing that comes to your mind when you don't have any support is exactly that. You know, you're ready to just... You know, and it happens to so many prisoners.
Go all in. It's either you're going to commit suicide or you're going to, I'm going to say, you're going to murder somebody for them to kill you. For them to kill you. That's what's on your mind. Either you're going to commit suicide or you're going to try to kill somebody in prison to let the state kill you, which is basically suicide, too. That's how your mind is. That's how my mind was.
Okay, Patrick, we have less than 5 minutes, so I want you and I want Stacy to finish up. And Rakiba, thank you for coming on. And if you can get a word or two, and we're going to continue this. Hopefully, we'll continue it to next week if you are all available. But I'm going to let you take the last 4 minutes and say whatever it is you want to say to the audience, contact, whatever.
I just want to say to society out there, just come together and realize that it's some negativity in here, some bad people in here, but the vast majority of us in here are good people. We deserve a second chance. I done met some good-hearted, great people in here. And they done, a lot of them has matured, and they got goals and dreams in here that they want to express into society. And I know many of us could be a positive influence out there in society and to mentor children and be a positive influence to the children out there in society. We just need that second chance. We need that chance to be able to express that out there instead of letting it die in him, letting us just perish in him without really realizing the dream. But like I said, I came here when I was 17 years old, and I have no children in society. So I have nothing
to carry on his name.
And these are things that I dream of. These are just express the things that my hopes and dreams in society, to be a mentor, to be a pastor, a minister, to have children. These are my dreams, and I just ask everybody to look into yourself and realize that we need a second chance. We need a chance.
There are some very good women and men and women behind these bars. You can't let their hopes die. Please,
I want to thank everybody out there. I want to thank everybody out there who's listening and who do have compassion in their hearts for. And there's many people out there who are fighting for us. I know that. There's many people out there that do care, and they fight for us. I want to say thank you to you, to all of y'all.
And contact me. Please contact me if you want to help us in any way in Florida. In these horrible life sentences. Life did not lead to death in the state of Florida or anywhere in the United States of America. I will, once again, my number is 813-370-2647. Please contact me. I will.
We will be having a follow-up on this show. It will be called Second Chances, and I will be in contact with you, Stacy. Once again, I thank you, and Rakiba. Patrick, good luck. We're going to keep you in prayer, and I want you, when you get a chance, just to go into the book of Ephesians and chapter 6, and it talks about we're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but against darkness and powers and principalities.
Yeah.
We're wrestling against rulers of darkness in high places in this world, and that is the government. So we need to actually start to encourage, and I ask the audience, please stop making calls to your legislative members insisting that they start looking at the prison reform in the areas of unrealistic sentencing to start having these sentence reductions. Again, Patrick, hopefully next week we'll be able to have this on again, and I will let Stacey know what day it is, because I believe Marion Jacobs will be back on with us next week. But thank you all for being on with us. And Stacey, again, thank you, Patrick. And again, Stacey, Florida Free Pet.
Florida Free Pet. And Free Pet is all one word, and society first in the state of Florida. Please give us a contact. We need help, and we need to get this out in the world. But more importantly, we need to get this out across America, that people behind the wire need second chances. We need to end these horrible long life sentences, and all long sentences.
Real quickly, I want to say, I started a petition to change.org. Again, I'm going to ask the audience and everybody else to sign and have your family members sign. The petition was filed a year ago, and it's to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities, long-term residential mental health facilities, long-term residential substance abuse facilities, long-term residential anger management. We need to replace these prisons that are doing absolutely nothing for the incarcerated men, women, and youth, and we need to start looking at these petitions to replace these prisons. I also want to thank Donna Winnett, who is with families, friends, and individuals of mental illnesses, because Donna has been working with the committee.
One minute remaining.
They have been focusing on getting hospitals outside the contracted prison providers to try to get independent providers to start going in to meet with these individuals. Mass General Hospital is considering right now as one of the independent providers, and we need to push for more independent providers to start going into the prisons. We also need to push for everyone to start going into legislative members to start going into the prisons, as Families Against Mandatory Minimums has been pushing for everyone. Start making it possible for these legislative members to go into the prisons and talk directly with these prisoners to hear their voice. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you, Bahiba, and thank you, Stacey.
Thank you.
We are now going to be ending this episode, and hopefully next week we'll be having you on again.
All right. Anytime.
Thank you for using Global Tech.